thank you very much for inviting me to come and speak today. My name is Michelle Tanner, and I am the Immunisation Education Facilitator for the Immunisation Advisory Centre at Auckland University. And what that means is that I'm an immunisation expert nurse, and I teach about immunisation predominantly to health professionals. But I will talk to anybody to encourage immunisation or to make people more aware of the importance of immunisation. Anything from two mums at a kitchen table to an international conference. I'm quite happy to talk right across that range. So it's a real pleasure to be here today. The other hat that I wear is I'm a Rotarian. I've been part of Rotary International since 2008. And I am currently the district co-chair for the polio committee. So our district is for Rotary is from the Bombays down to Hawke's Bay and across the island. And we have about 50 Rotary clubs in that area. And we have a couple of chairs that Rotary Foundation is our charity, and all of Rotary's work around polio eradication, that money comes from Rotary Foundation. And so we have a district chair for Rotary polio, for foundation and polio, and I sit on both of those, and I will be I sit on both those committees, and I'll be taking over as full chair next year. So what I've been asked to talk to you about is a recent trip that I've done to Pakistan. I was in Pakistan for World Polio Day last October. And so that's what I'm here to talk about, but I'm happy to talk about. I can answer any questions that you want around polio. I think you guys are more the expert on the post-polio side of things. But so that's what I'm going to talk about. So if you guys are happy with that. I've bought a few bits and pieces along with me to show you, and I'll sort of pass those around from my trip as we go along. So I haven't really prepared anything specifically, and very often I talk to a PowerPoint, which I'm not doing today. So this is all a bit off the cuff, so I hope it goes okay. So how did I end up in Pakistan? Well, I was very frustrated that working in the field of immunisation, I really didn't think that my colleagues understood the role that Rotary International had played in polio eradication. And the polio eradication program would not exist if it was not for Rotary International. Because Rotary International originally... some American Rotary clubs had a project to deliver polio vaccines when they became available to the Philippines, and they virtually eradicated polio in the Philippines, and they thought, if we can do this in the Philippines with 6 million vaccines, what can we do with millions more, billions of vaccines across the world? So Rotary, 30 years ago, Rotary International made a promise to the children of the world to eradicate polio. And as you know, we're this close. We're nearly there. And so I presented about this and a much more detailed history at a national immunisation conference. I then wrote it up for a professional nursing journal in New Zealand. And I just took a photograph I was quite chuffed that I had my article published. And I took a photograph of the headline, and I put it onto my Facebook page. So this was the article. So this is Logic, is the primary healthcare magazine. And this was the article. So I just took a photograph of this and stuck it on my Facebook page. I'll pass it through. And as a result of that, I had an invitation from a polio... I work on a project called World's Greatest Meal. It's another Rotary fundraiser. And one of my colleagues on World's Greatest Meal in Lahore in Pakistan said to me, can you come and do that presentation here? And I thought, go to Pakistan? Why not? So I sort of had a chat with my husband, and we decided whether or not we could afford it. I got a little bit of funding from GSK, the pharmaceutical company. They make vaccines. So they gave me a little bit of funding. And a couple of weeks later, I was in Pakistan. It was all a bit of a whirlwind, really. So I arrived in Pakistan in the middle of the night, and was amazed to see that there were 7 or 8 Rotarians had turned up at 3 o'clock in the morning at Lahore Airport to meet me. and I was being hosted by a Rotarian, so I wasn't staying in hotels. I was living with Pakistani families, which was going to make the experience much richer for me. So I stayed in a big house with not much furniture in, but I had sort of a private, I had virtually a floor of this house to myself. Very basic accommodation. The electricity went off twice a day. As you can imagine, the water, you don't drink anything other than water that you know has been purified or bottled. But every house has got, or every sort of middle class house has got water. You know that what we see in the office, the big tanks with the that you can go and get your cool or cold water from? They have those in their houses because they can't drink the tap water. So companies go and deliver the big vats of water for them. And I have one of these up in my room as well. So the first couple of days, I arrived on the Monday, I think it was, and on the World Polio Day was on Friday last week. So I had a few days before I needed to get stuck into these events around World Polio Day. And I was invited by another Rotarian up to the city of Zhang. And Zhang is about a four-hour drive out of Lahore. So he picked me up early in the morning, and Carla, my host, and I went with Khalid up to the city of Zhang. Very, very poor area. Now, I've lived in South Africa. I have seen poverty, so it wasn't a massive culture shock for me. But the volume of people was just quite incredible. So we had this interesting ride up to Zhang. And on our way, I was told that we would be calling, well, one of the first things we were doing up there would be calling into a school to do some, vaccinate some children. So I sort of envisaged it was going to be something like kids getting vaccines in school, like we all got in school, where you'd all be pulled out your classroom and line up, and I'd go along and pop polio drops in this school. That's not what happened. When we arrived, we had to be there at 3:30, really had to be bang on 3:30. So at 3:30 we arrived, big security gates. As we drive in, there is a red carpet. There are two national television crews, and there are a row of beautiful children in their school uniforms with baskets and rose petals, which they threw over me as I arrived. Now, at this point, I'm thinking, you obviously thought somebody of the status of Princess Diana was arriving. I'm just a Rotarian from Matamata, you know. But they threw all these roses petals over me, and there were all these dignitaries, local dignitaries there, and we went through to the principal's office, and there was lots of conversation going on. But outside, there was this dreadful PA system, and this chanting in Urdu, it sounded like chanting, it was really loud, and I thought it must be the school assembly, and after assembly, the children will go to their classrooms, and then they'll be out, and I'll vaccinate them. And then somebody said, it's time. And they took me through a door, which took me outside to this it was like an outdoor, bit like an outdoor area, but it had big sun shades over the top. And this was where they were having their school assembly. And as I stepped out, everybody clapped. And I'm beginning to feel quite uncomfortable at this point, because I'm thinking, you think I'm far more important than I actually am. And so I was led up, more red carpet, up onto a stage. They immediately switched from Urdu into English when I arrived. And we sat, all these dignitaries, up on the stage with these beautiful children, all in their beautiful uniforms. But I'm looking at these children thinking, these children are all aged sort of 7, 8, up to maybe 16. Now, you only give polio vaccine to children under 5. So I'm thinking, who am I vaccinating? And then after a while, they said, you'll be speaking next. Okay. Nobody told me I was making a speech. So I stood up and did a 5-minute off the cuff, told them how important, how we were working hard to raise money and raise awareness so that they had the vaccines and the resources to do for their eradication program. So they then lined up these 8 or 10 young children, little children in school uniform, who then came up on stage. A Department of Health worker came and had a box of vaccines, and I was to give these children vaccines up on stage with all of these television cameras and all these media outlets around us. And I was a bit cross at this point because I thought vaccinating 8-10 children for show is not really doing a lot. I felt it was all a bit of a farce, and I was a bit miffed, to be quite honest. But, you know, I did it and smiled. And then they all clapped, and I then went off stage and was interviewed by one of the television stations. You know, what did I think and why was I here and etc. So I just said a few words to them. And then we went off into the city to our accommodation. And I said, oh, I thought I was going to be vaccinating, you know, heaps of hundreds of kids. And they went, no, it was just television. Okay. So I felt a bit, I hadn't done what I thought I was going to do, and I was a bit disappointed. As I went through my 2 weeks in Pakistan, I then realised that what had happened was actually really important. Because in Pakistan, there is real problems around trusting the vaccine and believing that the vaccine is necessary. And I'm sure that you'll be aware that we've had problems in Muslim countries, particularly in Pakistan and in Nigeria, where the vaccine is perceived as Western medicine, and there is this huge distrust of anything Western. And of course the vaccines are Western, because these vaccines are not produced in Pakistan or Nigeria. They don't have facilities to produce the vaccine. And what also became apparent during my stay there was, do you remember the way they found Osama bin Laden?
Yes.
They did a hepatitis B vaccination program, and what they did was they went to the children, the complex where they thought he lived. They did this in Pakistan. They did this hepatitis vaccination program, so they said. And in order to do that, you need to take blood from older children before you do it. So they took the blood from the children, gave them the vaccines, and they used the blood to find DNA that they had Osama bin Laden's DNA to match, so that they could actually prove that he lived there because all of his family were there. And then they bombed and he was killed. But the damage that it has done to the trust of immunization programs, as you can imagine, is absolutely devastating. So this whole charade at this school was actually really important for them, because it raised awareness, and Rotary is a trusted organisation. To have a Rotarian talking about how important this is, and have a Rotarian from outside come in, was really important part of their awareness raising. So I felt much more comfortable about what I had done later, but at the time I was feeling quite disgruntled. The other thing was, one of the teachers there said to me, you know, thank you so much for coming. These children will remember this day for the rest of their lives. And I thought, well, it was such a big event for these children to have this Western woman. I mean, there were no white people in Jump at all, but to have this Western woman come to their school and talk to them about polio was a massive event in these children's lives. And that was really terribly humbling, to think that, you know, just for me, which is actually quite a little thing, could be so significant to them. That evening I then went and spoke to the Rotary Club of Jung Sador, and I was blown away because there was this huge, not a poster, but a banner, a canvas banner up on the wall that was sort of bigger than this, with, you know, welcome to the Rotary Club of Jung Sador, Michelle Tanner, Rotarian, blah, 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 blah. And I thought, these things cost hundreds of dollars to make. But I was much reassured later when I found out that they rustle these up for about $2. So I'm actually thinking, if I ever need one, I might just get them to do it for me and post it to me. And so I presented at the club. I was quite frustrated because they do not allow females to join this club. And it was one of my big worries about going to Pakistan was the treatment of women, and as a very liberal Western woman, how I was going to cope with this. I had absolutely no problems about covering my head and dressing appropriately. That didn't worry me. But I did get into this huge heated argument with my host who'd taken me up to Zhang's over dinner one evening about why women have to dress like this. And it wasn't acrimonious, it was heated, but it, you know, totally respectful of each other's opinions. But I said to him, why do women have to cover up? You live in this terribly hot country. Why do they have to cover up? What his argument was that because they basically don't want other men leering after their women. And I said to him, do you distrust your fellow man so much that you have to keep your wife covered in order to protect him and her? When you go to, he went to Sydney for the Rotary International Convention. I said, when you were in Sydney, were you leering after all those scantily clad young ladies walking around the Sydney streets in their shorts and t-shirts? And, no, absolutely not. Well, then why can you not trust your fellow man to respect your wife as she walks down with a skirt that shows her knees, or t-shirts weren't too bad, it was the knees and the shoulders that were the issue. Anyway, I digress. We then, what did we do? The next day, I was invited to go and look at a school project that they had there. And this Rotary Club completely funded this school. There was a building that had a couple of rooms on the side of it. The rooms didn't have a lot of walls. It was mainly just a roof, sort of two walls and then a pillar holding up the rest of the room. A very, very old room. And they took these rooms over, and basically they paid for a headmaster and they got volunteers in, they paid them a pittance. But they set up a school. And so there were all of these Muslim children sitting on mats because they didn't have, they had nothing at this school. It was really quite shocking. And I didn't realise this at first, but they were waving this around, so I saw this from a distance. And I thought, gee, these guys are really jacked up because they've all got iPads. I didn't realise that these were, what did we used to call them, slates? Yeah. And this was what they were using in their classroom. In the 21st century, this is how children are being educated. But I had to write my name. No one could see me write my name. So this is my effort at writing. Somebody else wrote, well done. So this was what they were using. And the older children, they gave me some ink. I didn't actually see what they were writing on. But these are the pens that they use. And they gave me a couple of inks. I have no idea what the ink is made of. But I didn't actually see very much paper. I've got a big photo shot. I've got about 3,000 photographs of my trip. I'm still in the process of sorting them and trying to condense them down to just a few hundred to put up on my Facebook page. So we went to this school, and I'm going to be our Rotary Club president in 2 years' time, and my goal during that year is actually to work with Rotary to provide some decent funding to this school. So I'm hoping to get a global grant together, so that which is a minimum of $30,000. So I'm hoping to get a global grant together with this club and try and do some serious work to help support this school. Another thing I did when I was up there is I went to Khalid, my host. We were going up there. This was his homeland, and he owned a big tract of land with some villages on it, with just tiny villages. With one of them had about 30 people, the other one had probably 100 people in. And these people work his land for him and live on the land. But a month earlier, there had been a massive storm that had absolutely ravaged his land and many other lands. The river, the flood defences were breached. And the people that I was talking to a month earlier had been sitting up on the flood defences, watching their lives just disappear, watching people being washed away. And they were really very traumatised. their houses, their mud houses had gone, and so while I was, when I was there, they were in the process of making the mud bricks to rebuild their houses. But trying to repair the water wells and whatever. So these people were living in absolute poverty. But they were just so happy. They were so thrilled to see me. They followed me around. The second village we stayed at for a couple of hours, and they had a Singer sewing machine, and it was exactly like the one my mother had, which I still have, and which still works. And so they were absolutely thrilled that I was able to thread this Singer sewing machine. And then they tried to show me how they make wool, and I had a go at that, and had a go with their dancing. And they made us some chapatis in the traditional way, sticking them onto the inside of a pottery oven chimney. I had a fantastic, I could have stayed there for ages, but we had to travel back to Lahore. But really, you know, they said something about the camels, not camels, and they used the camels to pull the ploughs in the fields. So all the replanting was going on because they'd lost everything. From there, we then drove back to Lahore. And then the following day, there was the beginning of a couple of days of World Polio Day events. So the following day was the Thursday. And again, it was awareness raising. There was a polio walk through the streets of Lahore. And what they do is they try and get the schools involved, because they're trying to get those teenagers, young adults, involved in this program, because they will be very influential over the younger children and also influencing parents in decision making. So there's a real effort to try and get those young adults involved in the program. And so there were a lot of schools there at the polio walk. So again, national newspaper, lots of dignitaries there, big banners that we walked through the streets with. So we did this polio awareness walk. That evening there was a World's Greatest Meal dinner, big fundraising dinner. World's Greatest Meal, as I said, is a polio, Rotary polio fundraiser. And a restaurateur had opened his restaurateur for the evening. All of the waiters wore End Polio Now t-shirts, and a proportion of all of the takings, a massive restaurant, there were hundreds of tables, and a proportion of the takings went to the World's Greatest Meal Project to fund polio. So that, we did that. The next day was World Polio Day, which is what I'd gone for, and I was invited. I was very political, because there are about 12 Rotary clubs in Lahore, and some of them had this conference in the morning, and some other ones had this seminar in the afternoon. And I got the impression there was a bit of competition, and one of them was official and one of them wasn't. I was invited to present at the conference in the morning. So I actually talked about polio vaccines and the history of the Sabin and the Salk vaccines, and when they came along, and why we're moving over to a bivalent as opposed to a trivalent vaccine, etc. So I gave that talk. And we had a young guy there who was about, well, he was 21, and he was a singer, and he was about this tall, because he had suffered from polio, on crutches. Legs didn't work at all, but he was really very independent. And he was a singer, and he sung this beautiful song about polio, which I have recorded on video. And at the end of the conference in the morning, there was an oath that was put up on the dart predictor. And it was all of the young people to swear an oath to the polio eradication program. And to swear that they would do everything they could to eradicate this terrible disease from their country. Because last year, polio numbers in Pakistan were higher than they had been for years and years. There's a good reason for that. You'll be aware that the Taliban is a problem in Pakistan, and the Taliban dominate in the Fatah regions, which is the federally administered tribal areas, and North Waziristan. And the Taliban have banned polio vaccines since 2012 in those areas. And what the government has done is had this big insurgency and pushed into that area and bombed the areas to displace the Pakistanis that are in those areas. So what they've done is they've displaced them, and the idea was that they would come through the mountains, through a mountain pass, and then they could vaccinate them all as they were displaced out of this region. The World Health Organization would vaccinate all of these people as they came through the pass. The problem was they didn't come through the pass. They came and trickled over the mountains in lots of different routes that were not monitored. And so all of these unvaccinated people have moved out to other areas of Pakistan, and they're actually, most of them are going to a couple of suburbs in Karachi. That's where most of them are ending up. But you've got these odd, you know, pockets all over the place. And they had something approaching 300 cases of polio in Pakistan last year, way bigger than the numbers that they had the previous year. So I did the conference in the morning and the seminar in the afternoon. I just talked about fundraising at the seminar. And then the following day, then we went to the Wagah border ceremony. Has anybody ever heard of it? I recommend that you Google it, W-A-G-H-A, Wagah. And it's on the border with India. Have you heard of it? Yeah, and it's this big patriotic display. But they've got the Pakistani side, and then over the other side of the gates on the Indian side, the same thing's happening. And there's all this pomp and circumstance and lots of Pakistani music and acts and whatever. It's 1 hour before sunset every single day of the year. And then the border patrols come out and they do all of their goose step marching, and very, very dramatic. The same thing's happening on the Indian side, and it's actually called, it's the flag lowering service ceremony. So all they're going to do is lower the flag, but they just put all this pomp and circumstance. All these, well, I say tourists, but they're all Pakistanis, there aren't any white people there. All these, you've got these big, we sat on the road, we sat in these bleachers because we were honoured guests. We got front sort of good seats. But then they had these two huge sort of stacked seating, like at a rugby match, but you know, many, many, many tiers. There must have been 5,000 people on each. And all the women on one side, which was stunning riot of colour, and all the men on the other side. And we all watched the ceremony, which was all fantastic. When we finished, we couldn't drive away because our car had been blocked in. Exactly 1 week later, this was the Sunday, so now I've got my dates mixed up, but this was the Sunday. Exactly 1 week later, when I was in Karachi, there was a bombing at the Wagah border ceremony and 52 people were killed. When I actually looked on the Washington Post website, they had a map of where the bomb had gone off, and it was right where our car was parked. It was about 10 metres away from where our car was. It was after the ceremony. So therefore the grace of God and all that. But it was, to read about a bombing when you know that you've actually been there makes it much more poignant. My impressions of Lahore, it was, traffic was madness. We had a driver. My host has her drive. She doesn't drive because it's just insane. So she employs a driver full time. Hassan was totally charming. And he, I saw this, the first time I saw a motorbike with a whole family on, I went, ah! And he said, what's the matter? And I said, you only allow two people on a motorbike in New Zealand. And he said, this was hilarious. He said, well, how do people get around? How do they move their families around? I said, well, they buy a car. You know? And he said, we can't afford cars here. So the most I ever saw on one motorbike was six. I thought it was five, but then as they went round the corner, I saw that somebody had a baby in their arm hanging off the other side. So six people on a motorbike. If you'd have told me, I would not believe it, but I have seen it with my own eyes. It was true. But I don't know if they've got any road rules in Lahore, but if they have, nobody knows what they are, and nobody does anything about enforcing them. You just go where you want, and if somebody's in your way, you just lean on your horn. And I saw a girl knock off a bike, but they all sit side saddle on the bike, so as the bike got bumped, she just jumped off, you know, growled at the guy and got back on the bike and kept going. So On the Sunday, before we went to Wagga, on the Sunday was, I guess, the highlight of my trip. My host, Paola, kept polio vaccine in her freezer at home because she had a good relationship with the Department of Health. And as they drove around, if she saw a plot of land with some families that had moved in on that land with children, and she knew she hadn't vaccinated them, she would just go home and get vaccine and go and vaccinate these children. And she said, we're going to set up an immunisation camp at Lahore Zoo. So she hired and paid for a gazebo, tables, chairs. She, from her local Rotary, she got lots of Rotary resources, stickers and pens and pencils and stuff to give the children. And from the Department of Health, she got vaccines. So we arrived there 9:30 on Sunday morning. We were starting at 11:30 to set up. Nothing arrived. Right, now, I'd seen her get it all booked the day before, but nothing arrived. So all these frantic phone calls, and it turned out that they had delivered the gazebo and tables and chairs to another zoo in Lahore. I know Lahore have more than one zoo. But so we had to wait for all this stuff to arrive. And eventually, we set up this shade that was probably the size of this garden, row of tables, heaps of resources, lots of chairs. It was quite funny because the chairs were the quality you would see at a wedding, with, you know, all nicely padded with bows, and not with bows, but I could imagine them with bows. So they set all of this up. When the vaccines arrived, there were 500 vaccines. So Paola threw a dizzy fit because there were not enough vaccines. And I'm thinking, 500, that's a lot of kids to vaccinate. Anyway, we ended up, we vaccinated 3,200 children in 2.5 hours. That's what I went to Pakistan to do. And how did it work? Well, because we were there early, we were supposed to start at 11:30, but we had vaccines, we had the stuff we needed. There were kids walking past us. So I said, you know, why don't we just start now? But the local minister for health had to be there, and he wanted his photograph taken with me, and there were some other Rotarians. There were 4 Dutch and 2 Italian Rotarians I had met the previous day. And they had also come in for a week, and they were coming to join us as well. So this minister, when he arrived, he wanted me to pose for pictures. And I was like, if you want to, I'm vaccinating. If you want a picture, just stand behind me. But I'm busy, mate, you know. So he sort of ended up, he was trying to get me to stand in this way and do this. And the really frustrating thing was, he had heard about cold chain. Do you know what cold chain is? Cold chain is you have to keep the vaccines between 2 and 8 degrees. So, you know, we transport vaccines in a chili bin for that reason. And in immunisation fields, people are really obsessive about cold chain. So I'm sure there have been lots of teaching to the health workers about how important cold chain is. Now, I'm an authority on cold chain, and he was trying to tell me that when I put the drops in, because it's a multi-dispenser, so you put 2 drops in one child, and you can probably do about 13, 16 children with the same dispenser. And he was telling me that I had to vaccinate one child and put the vaccine back in the chili bin while I painted the child's finger purple. I'll tell you about that in a minute. And then when I did the next child, go to the chili bin and take it out. Well, you can see every time you open the chili bin, warm air is going in. So all the other vaccines that you're not using are warming up and warming up. And I was trying to tell him that I didn't need to do this, because I know you don't need to do that. And so every time I put a vaccine on the table to pick the pen up to mark with a finger, he would whip the vaccine away and put it. So I was actually pretty glad when he got his photos and fucking off and left me alone to do what I knew I was doing. And I was really head down bummer. And what we did was, as these thousands and thousands of children were going past, you basically just looked at the crowd, and if you saw a child that looked under 5, I would just say, polio, polio, and they all know what polio means. And they would come over, and then you would say, I would check the fingers to see if there was ink on there. If there wasn't, they could have a polio vaccine. So usually they would come over. They were all shell-shocked because there were Europeans there. That was, you know, that there was that bit of shock to start with. And some people, a lot of them had never seen a European person in the flesh. So actually having a European person there was quite intimidating for them, I think, for some of them. So some of them would come over comfortably, vaccinate them, and off they go. But other ones would go, no, no. And then I would get somebody who was speaking to them in Urdu and explain to them what we were doing. And very often they knew that their child had been recently vaccinated or they didn't want the vaccine. But, you know, otherwise they would go ahead and we would vaccinate. The purple pinky, the purple ink, the indelible ink is put onto a child's left pinky and it stays on there for about a month. It starts off purple, it goes brown, but it stays on there for about a month on the nail. And the polio vaccine, you should only give it every 4 weeks. So if you give it in less than 4 weeks, it doesn't do anything, so it's a wasted dose. So all we need to make sure is that the child has not had a polio vaccine in the previous 4 weeks. So that's why you check their finger, see if there's any ink on there. If there is, we don't vaccinate them because they've been vaccinated within 4 weeks. If there is no sign of ink, then we go ahead and vaccinate. So potentially these children could get vaccinated 12 times a year. That's absolutely fine, it's not a problem. So yeah, that was when, I mean, I just was vaccinating one kid after another, ink on the finger. If I had, I didn't usually have to go and call them because they were usually just lined up. So I would just do one, ink on the finger, into the next one, ink on the finger, give them a sticky and move on. So that's why we could get through so many. When I put my head up after about 2 hours because I was thirsty, nobody gave me a drink, there were probably, I'd say, probably about another 12 people giving polio vaccines, but not as consistently. You know, they were drifting in and doing a few and doing other stuff as well. So that was really satisfying to know that you'd actually managed to vaccinate this number of children. Was really fabulous. It was the Sunday night that we went to Wagga. On Monday, I flew to Karachi. Which is where the National Polio Plus office. So Polio Plus is the Rotary fundraising campaign. And the National Office is in Karachi. And I was invited by the National Polio Chair to come to Karachi if I was coming to Pakistan. And while I was there, I didn't do any vaccinating when I was there, but I presented at a couple of Rotary clubs. I had a working lunch at the polio office and they called out for pizzas. So we have Pizza Hut pizzas. It was the only European meal I ate for 2 weeks and it made me sick. One of the other girls in the office ended up hospitalized and I got so sick that this was Tuesday, that when I flew home on Friday and I arrived on Saturday, I had to be wheelchaired off the aeroplane in Brisbane and again here in Auckland because I could hardly walk. And I knew that I had to go to the doctor, but I knew that if I went to a doctor I would be hospitalised and I wouldn't get home at the weekend and there wasn't anything that was going to stop me coming home because I was sick and I just wanted to get home. So while I was getting sick, some of my activities in Karachi were cancelled, but I did get to a renal hospital where they do a renal transplant every single week there, and most of their transplants come from people, they're live kidneys, so they're not people that have died, they're brothers or sisters or blood relatives that have donated a kidney. And then I also went to a mother and child hospital and I gave some injected in, because obviously I can give injected immunisations. So I did some immunisations of some very tiny, tiny babies at this hospital. I guess the highlight of my trip to Karachi was I was asked, while I was there, I was told that I would be doing a lecture at the University of Greenwich in Karachi. And okay, what do you want me to talk about? So we ended up, I talked about polio vaccines, and I talked about why we're moving from oral polio vaccine to injected polio vaccine, why they need the transition and how they were doing the transition. And they videoed the talk, and they're now using that talk for World Health Organization workers in that are delivering the polio vaccines in Karachi. So I sort of felt that I'd had left a bit of a legacy there, which I was quite pleased about. I did vaccinate in Karachi. We went to the railway station. Now, my perceptions of India and Pakistan was probably that it would smell, and it didn't. But the train station did. Boy, did it smell. They set up an immunisation post at the train station. So again, anybody walking in and out of that train station, Kunt station in Karachi, would get vaccinated under five. But they also go onto the trains, and the reason they target this particular train station is, you remember I told you about all the IDPs, the internally displaced people? If they come from up in those areas and they come to Karachi, this is where they come to. They come to this railway station. So it's really important that they try and vaccinate everybody there, because a lot of these will be Peshwari people or children who have not had a vaccine, possibly ever, but definitely not since 2012. And we went onto the train, and how people travel for hours and hours on those trains. They were basic, they smelt like toilets. They were so hot, it was just incredibly uncomfortable. So I'm glad that we just did half a dozen kids on the train, there weren't many there. And then we went down the platform, we vaccinated everybody on, you know, all the under fives on the platform as well. The other thing that I did in Karachi was the UNICEF representative to Karachi, to Pakistan, was new. She was actually a Kiwi lady from Christchurch, but she happened to be in Karachi having her briefing from World Health Organization, Bill and Melinda Gates, local UNICEF workers, Rotary International, in Karachi. So I was able to go along to her briefing. So I really got to see what the real problems were about delivering the polio vaccine. And one of the biggest problems is the corruption of the police force. You'll be well aware that polio workers, at that point, 39 polio workers have been shot dead just because they were giving polio vaccines out. And they're supposed to be protected by the police. But the police, half the time, are telling the Taliban where to find them in order to kill them, because the corruption in that country is just terrible. And so the police don't turn up on time. If they do turn up on time, they don't do a very good job. And it's a real problem for these workers who are delivering vaccines for an absolute pittance. So I think that's probably one of the single biggest problems. And also they're not paying them. The funding streams for the money comes from different places. And basically these people do the work and they don't get paid for 6 months, which doesn't make them very inclined to come back and do some more work for them. So. Karachi, everybody kept telling me in Karachi, they kept saying, you come from Lahore, isn't Lahore beautiful? And I'm thinking, no, actually it's not. But when I look around Karachi, I think I've put my finger on what the difference is. Lahore obviously has some form of street rubbish collection, which doesn't exist in Karachi. So Karachi, they just push all the rubbish. You know, somebody might come along and sweep, and there'll be sort of that whole garden area there will just be this high in rubbish, and it just sits there and rots. So it's just filthy, absolutely filthy. And I think yes, there's heaps of rubbish in Lahore, but it's not quite the same. And then out of this rubbish, you know, there will be the most magnificent, huge corporate skyscrapers. So there was this poverty and this opulence sitting side by side in Karachi. A couple of things that I've got here. I had, when I was at the Rotary Club of Jung Sador, they had a very famous Pakistani poet who was a member of their club, and he himself gave me this book which he had signed. This book This is my, oh, you can see here. This book is for use for the children in the schools, and it tells the story of polio and why it's important to get the polio vaccine. So it's a children's book, but you've got four different languages. So you can go into different languages and it will read, because obviously most of these children are illiterate. And it will read the story to the children. I have a beautiful photograph. This is you know, this is Jonas Salk. So they have this book. Again, I've got this book in English. Obviously, it opens the other way. But the story of Jonas Salk, and I have the most gorgeous photograph when we were at the zoo of a very elderly gentleman with, I presume it was his grandchild, but it might have been his child, sitting on his lap, and he's reading this book in the shade at the zoo. He's reading this book to his sort of three-year-old grandchild. But the three-year-old grandchild is just peeked around and looking at me. It's the most beautiful photograph. So yeah, this is one of the other resources that they use for the children. Oh, you know, I said I didn't see any paper. That was the slates. This is what they write on. So the pens that I passed around, I don't know how they get the ink off, whether they paint. I guess they paint over it. But yeah, this was what they use with those pens. I was so touched when I went to another school. The school that I told you about where they had the assembly outside. The female teachers obviously weren't allowed in the principal's office, but they wanted to see me. So I went out and had a bit of a hooey with them in the corridor outside. And they gave me this this beautiful card which they had made for me. I was very touched with that. On the very last night that I was there, Aziz Memon, who, as I said, is the National Polio Chair, for Pakistan, who I'm hoping may be coming over to New Zealand later on this year. He invited all of the district governors, previous district governors from his district, and we went to this very posh yacht club and had dinner there. And the Minister for Health for the Sindh province came, and she presented me with an award, just recognising my efforts for going out there and in polio eradication. So I was really proud to receive this from her as well. So that's... I've probably talked way too long, but so that's an account of my trip to Pakistan. I hope it was what you wanted. Yeah. Does anybody have any questions?
Yeah. Why are you changing from oral to injections?
I knew somebody would ask that. The injected polio vaccine will stop you becoming paralysed if you get polio. I mean, obviously, you know, the virus is ingested through the mouth, and when you get the disease, the virus replicates in the gut, and from there it goes into your blood, and if you're really unlucky, it will then go into your nervous system, and that's when you will get either the bulbar paralysis, which will put you on an iron lung. As long as you live in a developed country. If you live in a developing country, it means you'll just die. Or you get the paralytic polio, which many of you have suffered from. Now, what the oral polio vaccine does is it's a live vaccine, so it's got weak virus in it. And that replicates in the gut in a way to make your body make antibodies in the gut. So you cannot, so you have the polio vaccine, you make antibodies, which is what protects you in your gut. So if you then ingest wild polio virus, the virus can't replicate in the gut. But, so you, yeah, so what the injected polio vaccine, because it doesn't get into the gut, it only goes here, it doesn't stop the virus replicating in the gut, but it will stop you becoming paralyzed. So the virus, you have the injection, you ingest the virus, you won't become paralyzed because the antibodies are in your blood, they're not in your gut. So the virus, if it gets into your blood, will be killed off. So you cannot become paralyzed, but you will still replicate the virus in your gut. So New Zealand children, if they were to come in contact with polio, they would excrete the virus. They wouldn't get they would definitely not get paralyzed, but they can still excrete the virus and pass it on to other people. Now, New Zealand kids won't come in contact with polio virus because we haven't got any. And so there's no risk from them passing it on. So we can safely use an injected vaccine when we don't have endemic polio. But if you have endemic polio, you have to use the oral vaccine. So that's why, you know, we're using oral vaccine in Pakistan and many, many other developing countries. Now we've got to the stage where we've got rid of endemic polio from almost every country in the world. We've got to move from the polio oral vaccine to the injected vaccine, because what is the risk of the oral vaccine? Do you know what the risk is?
Going from one person
to another. No, the problem with the polio vaccine, the oral polio vaccine, is you can very rarely get polio from it. And in New Zealand, we had a young mum in Auckland who ended up in a wheelchair because her child had been vaccinated and she obviously didn't hand wash properly. She got the virus in her gut. It wasn't that long ago. It was only about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, that is a really rare risk of polio. But you can see in New Zealand situation, the vaccine was becoming a bigger problem than the disease, because the disease is gone. It's not a problem at all. So what we have to do in places like Pakistan is put the inactivated vaccine in place, the injected vaccine in place, to offer immunity while we reduce the use of oral polio vaccine. And at the moment, we're swapping from the polio vaccine is a trivalent vaccine. We've got three different types of polio. Well, what they're going to do with the oral vaccine, what they're going to do with the oral vaccine is go down to a bivalent vaccine. So we're not going to have any type 2 in there. So there'll be no protection from type 2. So again, they've got to put the injected polio vaccine, which is trivalent, to give coverage to type 2. So it's really, you've got to introduce the injected vaccine while you phase out the other one. So from an eradication perspective, we've used oral polio vaccine, we've transitioned over to the injected polio vaccine. We will continue to monitor water samples and river samples, because we have to get rid of all of this virus, vaccine virus. And when we've got rid of all the vaccine virus, after we've stopped the oral polio vaccine, we continue with the injected for a few years. And we have to know that there is no virus anywhere in the environment, anywhere in the world, then we can stop using the injected vaccine. So eventually, there will be no polio vaccine. Certainly in my lifetime, and probably in your lifetime, we will stop using any polio vaccines, because the disease will literally be eradicated. There will be no virus in the world. It will happen, I'm absolutely confident.
Even with all this conflict in Syria, Nigeria.
We should be polio free from the virus vaccine, from the wild virus by the end of 2018.
Wow.
That's why I say it really is this close. Yeah.
What about that new strain they feel they had in America earlier this year, or later last year?
I don't know much about it, but if there is a mutant strain, they'll get on top of it. It's not been enough. I mean, they're certainly not talking about creating any vaccines. for it, but the technology is there if we need to revaccinate. And the thing is that if there are any, I mean, there have been no cases of polio in America. There have been absolutely no cases of polio in America. But the thing with the Global Polio Eradication Initiative is that whenever there is an outbreak, they get on top of it, you know, with all guns blazing. So that's why Syria's polio outbreak was got rid of it almost instantly. As soon as we knew it was there, they were on top of it. So, and the beauty of the, have you heard of the end game strategy? This end game strategy that has been developed to eradicate, to knock the final nail in the coffin, if you like, of polio, is all of that infrastructure is going to be used for other health programs for children. So all of those, all of that networking, all of that infrastructure, all of those bridges are going to be used for things like vitamin A, measles vaccine. So we've got this amazing infrastructure into the most remotest areas of the world that is not just all going to disappear when we've eradicated polio, it will continue to be used for other child health missions.
Do any of these vaccines need a
booster? Yes. So with the, all of them do. So with all of the polio vaccines do. So with the oral vaccine, if we live in New Zealand, no, we don't need to have boosters of it once we've completed our childhood schedule. But if we go to Pakistan, we would have to have a booster to make sure we don't bring any of the virus out of the country. The injected vaccine, the children have it at six, in this country, 6 weeks, 3 months, 5 months, 4 years, and 4 years. So once they've had four doses, they don't need any more, not for the rest of their lives, unless they travel to Pakistan at the moment. Yeah. But if you have something like measles vaccine do not need boosters. If you've had two doses of measles vaccine or hepatitis vaccine, you're immune for life. You don't need any more.
In New Zealand, they put it up, when they get the vaccines, they get it for measles and various other things. In Pakistan, is it solely just for polio?
Oh, absolutely not. Every single country in the world has World Health Organization recommended vaccines. And actually, many developing countries, because they get extra funding from Gavi and Bill and Melinda Gates and various other organisations, many very, very poor countries get vaccines that New Zealand children don't get. So, for example, Rwanda introduced the cervical cancer vaccine before New Zealand did. Most of Africa had rotavirus vaccine before New Zealand did. We only started using the vaccine in July last year. So, but there are, the rollout of vaccines into poor countries is growing exponentially at the moment.
Yes, with an existing
If you say that you've never had a vaccine. Yeah, but when the vaccine came out, if you were still a child, you wouldn't be vaccinated. No. The other thing is, I don't know the answer to this, but I've never had a measles vaccine, but I know I'm immune to measles because I had a whopping dose of it when I was 7 years old. Now, I actually don't know whether, if you have polio, you are then immune to polio. I do know the answer to this. You will be immune to that type of polio. So remember I said there were three, wild polio virus 1, 2 and 3. So if you had wild polio virus 2, you will be immune to 2, but you are not immune to 1 and 3.
But they never gave me the vaccine because they said I was. At that time, they didn't know really what to do with us.
Yeah, I'm sure that you guys would have fallen in that. You've got a brand new vaccine. Yeah. People that have had disease, they may not have understood the process of the pathology of the disease and whatever. So, So, in answer to the question, which is not going to be on the phone, but in answer to the question, if you guys were to go to Pakistan,
then yes, you would still need to be vaccinated because you will only be immune for one particular type of polio. So yes, you will, because you have got immunity to one type of polio, but then two other types of polio. But it's wild polio virus 1, 2, and 3, only one of them affected you. No, they're all paralytic. They can all cause paralysis. But they're all different types of... you would not know unless your CSF, your fluid around your brain was analysed and they isolated which virus. Then they can tell you whether you've got type 1, type 2 or type 3. So you would have had... Say you had type 1, you will be immune to type 1, but you're not immune to 2 and 3. There is no 2 in the world at the moment. That's gone. Yeah. So you would still need... Yeah, so... Yeah, you don't have immunity to all three types of